Good evening. I've got more handouts. I've got some running off if we need more. I've got a few here. I've got some that should be about finished up on the copy machine. If you need one, raise your hand, please. I'm going to step back here and get the rest of them while y'all are doing this. Watch out. Huh? Well, no. I have more. If you need one, we have, I think, what will be a sufficient amount. Thank you, Mike. We have a hand over here. Is Jack Ray in here? Good. I mean, not. Jack's birthday's coming up, right? What is the actual day?
The first.
The third? The first. And he'll be 85?
Yes.
Jack, first. If you'd like a card, Rachel has cards. So you can see her. If you have your own cards, that's fine too. But we want to try to shower him with cards. He's been a big part of Lehman and a lot of other things. He's a very good man, so we want to let him know that we appreciate him on his birthday. Who does?
To Jack. We mailed one.
Oh, cards are in the mail. Okay.
I was going to take.
Well, it could be next year. It could be. If you want to get something fast, order from Amazon. It's like hours later they drop it on your porch. An uncommon music. One of the things we talked about is, I'll mention a little bit more, one of the things that we want to do here at Lehman, and this is an independent congregation. We don't have any ties officially to a church government anywhere, even Nashville, where they got 6,000 congregations. We're not even tied to them. But many who would be known as churches of Christ have embraced a restoration principle. And that is, okay, look at all that's out there that calls itself church. 2,000 years worth of stuff happening. People breaking off for people who broke off, and all this kind of thing going on for a variety of reasons. And so what we are trying to do is we're wanting to go back and see what it looked like when Jesus built it. What did he have in mind? What does he want to do with regard to the church? I think that was what got my attention in 1968 when I was disillusioned with religion. And I saw this phrase, New Testament Church. And I thought, oh, maybe that's where one ought to look. And sure enough, here I am. So one of the things people notice about us is that we do not use instruments of music in our worship. And sometimes it takes people a while to notice it. If we point it out, they sometimes, oh, okay. But sometimes they notice it right off. I'm from a religious group known as a liturgical group. And that means, well, that they had a liturgy. When I would go to services, you had a book. And depending upon what day it was, or what the date was, you had what you would do in that service in the book. You had prayers to recite. You had songs to sing. And you had scriptures to read. Okay? It was very, very close, to the Roman Catholic Church. And as a result, they had a serious liturgical calendar wherein you'd have different seasons and different things. And the colors on what would have been called the altar, the trappings would change color from season to season of church season to season. So there was a lot of tradition, a lot of this, a lot of that, a lot of the other. And one of the things that was very different to me because of that particular tradition was this would be called the sanctuary. And it goes way back. And one of the things about it, if you were running from the law back in the old days and you could get in a church building, you had sanctuary. So it's sort of like cities of refuge principle, only a bit different. But then that took on a life of its own, and it was a place. What song does Andrew sing when people are leaving? I don't know if he sung it tonight, did he? I don't know. I didn't hear it. Tiptoe, tiptoe in God's house, tiptoe, like a mouse. His mice are notoriously quiet. And that's an interesting thing, because this isn't God's house. It's a building where God's people meet. How about that? There is nothing holy intrinsically about it. It's set apart for a particular purpose, but then so is my car. And this is a holy purpose, and yeah, but it's not like it has some kind of intrinsic value to it. Now, to talk about that just a little further, when I was part of the tradition that I was in, you're probably familiar with acolytes. Maybe not. They got the red and then the white thing on top of it. I was an altar boy. That black. You know, and so I would assist the priest with communion. Now, much as many of you may, probably more of you here that know more about Catholicism than the Anglican Church, but they have a lot in common. And one of it is how they view the Lord's Supper, which we'll have a lesson on that, Lord willing, tomorrow. But we'd go down to the front. That was another thing. I grew up, until I was a fairly young boy, as a Methodist, and then the family switched to Episcopalian. And the doctrine of the two is about the same. The Methodists were an attempt to take some of the ornate stuff and all out of the Anglican Church, Church of England, and get it more folksy. But doctrinally speaking, they had the same articles that they professed. So anyway, we'd go down, and they had wafers. And you weren't breaking off. And there was a reason why you had wafers and you didn't break off. And you've probably all experienced this. Have you ever broken off and pieces go flying everywhere? You look down, there's some on your pants, or, you know, your wife has got some on your shoulder. I mean, those things just fly everywhere. Well, in the tradition I was in, that was holy of itself, by itself, in and of itself. And you can't just have holy stuff flying all over the place, right? So, in fact, just to be sure, as you were down front, as the priest would come by, you would, and they'd stick a wafer on your tongue. There were jokes we had, mostly young people who were irreverent, because what it would do, as soon as you got it in your mouth, it would suck up to the top of your mouth, and it would get like suction, vacuum. And you're trying to get your tongue and get it, which is not the most holy feeling moment of the world. But you can't just leave it up there, right? I mean, you try to develop techniques where it doesn't happen. So that's, but anyway, that said, you couldn't have stuff flying all over the place because it was holy of itself, by itself, in and of itself. If you have ever watched a vampire movie, which of course you have, if you've ever read Bram Stoker's Dracula in particular, one of the things they talk about was putting the host in the coffin. And that wafer is the host, the body of Christ. And no vampire's going to get in his coffin if there's one of those things in there because it's holy and it'll burn him up. Well, as you might suspect, the fruit of the vine, which in the case of where I was actual wine, alcoholic wine, okay? And there's another little thing that those of us who were altar boys would talk about, is that it seemed that the priests were notoriously bad at estimating how much wine needed to be poured out to serve the congregation. Because since you couldn't throw it away and you had to do something with it, the priest, as a holy receptacle himself, had to consume it. Yes. So the sanctuary comes into that. that play that has something in and of itself that's holy, this place. So it's very quiet. Very quiet. I mean, if you did louder than that, you'd be shushed and brought into line because it was the sanctuary. But what would you hear? The organ playing in the background, you see. Well, if you had asked me about, hey, what's up with the organ? I would have probably thought, that's a dumb question. Everybody's got organs and pianos and stuff. You know? Just how business is done. So one of the first things we want to do tonight is show, has that always been the way business was done? Can we go back to when Jesus built the church? And can we find, in the new covenant, remember we talked about we're under the new covenant, we're not under the old, we can eat catfish and we can walk over graves and all kinds of stuff that you couldn't do back then, but we're under the New Testament, the new covenant that Christ has made with his people, his body, the church. And so we're going to want to look and see in there, okay, what do we do? A lot of things they did in worship back then that we don't do now. For instance, we don't observe Passover. We don't observe Feast of Tabernacles. We don't do Pentecost. We don't burn incense. We don't sacrifice animals. And any number of other things. Now, one of the things that comes up in this discussion is this, when we're talking about Old Covenant, New Covenant. Because sometimes people, if we say, you know, I don't see any authorization for instrumental accompaniment in the worship of the church. And one of the things that's commonly said is, and it's a true statement, it is, the Jews use instruments in their worship. And they did. And so let me say right now that an instrument of music is not a bad thing in and of itself. It's neither good nor bad. It's like a lot of other things. A knife isn't a bad thing, but if you go to stabbing people indiscriminately, it's become something that's not so good. So we're not saying that instruments of music themselves are bad. I know some very accomplished musicians. We have some of them here. How about that Chloe playing the violin, and you got Mallory and Lindsay playing the piano, and Abby as well. And that, you know, we got people like Willow who have have great voices and very accomplished, with that. So we got musically, but even with like Willow, the purpose of our singing is not to see, hey, let's get all the people who really sing well. Now that happens a lot, doesn't it? And they wear robes and they, one of the things, when we're walking around church buildings, looking at them up in Louisville to get some ideas about when we build over on the Trace, one of the things that was incredibly, I mean, hits you in the face, brought back old memories. In fact, we went to a Catholic place. It was so much like an Episcopal place. The guy and I were just, you know, talking about it. What? You see, look at this. Look at this. How small is that? What we saw in disciples' buildings would have been like the Catholic thing would have pretty much consumed this auditorium. And so one of the things that the architects, you know, adjust for is they don't have to draw a lot of stuff about that because we don't have a lot going on up there. We don't have instruments. We don't have a choir. So, those are some things we want to look at and talk about, okay? An uncommon music. Now, this is an interesting thing to say because it is uncommon to sing a cappella in worship today. A cappella, I have to do my Andy Griffith thing. Remember when Andy asked Barney if he could sing a cappella? And he said, a cappella. Who knows what a cappella literally means? In the manner of the church. The manner of the cappella, the chapel, the church. why would you call something people do without instruments in the style of the church? It would kind of make you think that when they started calling it that, that's the way the church sang. And you would be right. So let's kind of examine that a little bit. Okay, points to ponder here. While it's unusual for us to sing that, my aunt, who was an aunt back when I was growing up, but she became an aunt, she was a member of Hardshell Baptist and sometimes the Primitive Baptist. And so when I would spend the summer with my Uncle Charlie and my Aunt Evelyn, she'd drag me to church. And they didn't use instruments. In New Zealand, in particular, there were Presbyterian churches that didn't use instruments. There's a book that was written back in the 1800s about a theological seminary in South Carolina that was a Presbyterian theological seminary by a guy who's just saying we have no authority to use instruments of music and worship. We don't need to do it. We shouldn't do it. And Presbyterians, some of them, some places don't, because they don't find apostolic authority for it. But we're unusual in churches of Christ. Now, I will say this, to be perfectly honest with you. Some of the congregations of the churches of Christ have started using instruments. I don't agree with that. I think it takes them out of the let's do what they did back then. I don't care for it. But here again, we're an autonomous congregation here. They are too. I can't go over and stop them, and they can't come over here and make us do it. What we do here is the business of the Bible and us. And so we want to try to do what we can be comfortable with there. All right. Remember what we said about the covenants. Maturity is expected in the new covenant. It's different from the old in that you've got to mature if you're going to do what the New Testament asks you to do, which is take the gospel out there to everybody in this crazy world of ours so that they don't chew you up and spit you out. Abstract thought is much more part of the New Testament than the Old Testament. Abstract thought is how you start thinking when you're usually between 12 and 14 that lets you go into the adult well and process things where you don't have to be told stay out of the street. You can just figure out, well, you know, there are cars out there and they're going fast. It's probably a good idea for me not to go out there. As opposed to a 5-year-old who's, woo, there they go. And narrative is a teaching device. What it looks like is a teaching device. All right, that said, authority. There are two ways that the Bible establishes authority. Therefore, there are two ways that the Bible authorizes. And one is something that is explicitly said. And the other is something that is implicit. Okay, explicit's easy. Don't do this. Well, you can if you want to, but stand up. What'd I say? Stand up. Is that hard to figure out? What did I want you to do? Stand up. I explicitly told you in so many words, that's what explicit is. In so many words, you're told to do it. You don't have to say, I wonder what he meant. Well, he meant to stand up. But there are things that are implicit. For instance, in the Great Commission, in the command of the Great Commission, as we talk about from time to time, is make disciples. But one of the parts of that, one of the participles that is in that is go, as you're going, go. Okay? Go is explicit. Go. You know, he didn't mean don't go. He meant go. How do you go? Contained within go is anything that you need to do to go. It's implied. Surely you got to go some way. And if it doesn't tell you how, then any way that doesn't otherwise break the law is perfectly all right. Okay? That's the two ways that the Bible teaches. Now, that said, one of the things we want to keep in mind is when we're looking at New Testament worship as is pictured in the New Testament, that one of the things that is talked about is don't have a lot of distractions going on to keep you out of focus from what you're there to do. Okay? That's one thing. And so communication in song has implications. Ephesians 5:19, Colossians 3:16, speaking to one another. We're talking to one another, okay? Part of singing, and it has a whole lot of things that does, we speak to one another. We do a whole lot of things when we speak to one another. And also we show a solidarity because we're speaking together the same things to each other, okay? Okay, I had a Bible study. We had a young lady who just got her doctorate just recently. She's an official veterinarian now. But she was an undergrad student at UT, and I was in Knoxville. And she was very evangelistic, and from time to time she had an edge because she was a very nice looking young lady, so she could get studies with boys, and it wasn't all that difficult. And so, she gets to study with this guy. So, and he, is a song leader for a, Pentecostal group, okay? And so we're studying and we're looking at Ephesians 5:19. Everybody just look at Ephesians 5:19, please. Colossians 3:16 will give you the same thing, but look at that. You see where we're speaking to one another? So I ask him a question, and I wasn't trying to be, you know, out of line or anything. It's a fair question. It's a fair question considering what Ephesians 5:19 says about singing. And I said, so you're the song leader? Yes. I said, do you have instruments? Oh man, they had instruments. Loud. Big old loud instruments. In fact, he even said, he says, it's kind of like a rock concert. And that's loud. I said, can you hear what other people are singing? He said, I can't even hear myself. And I'm the song leader. Now, does that seem to be a bit, just that alone, does that seem to be a bit of a problem with teaching one another? Yeah. And he saw that. And so he talked to the congregation where he led singing and got them to agree to have an a cappella service. He did. And they had one. And so he comes back in for the next study, and I said, could you hear? I could hear people singing. I could hear me. I could hear other folks. We could hear each other. And so I'm kind of starting to feel like, oh, maybe we're getting somewhere with this. And he said, but we're not going to do it anymore. And you know why they weren't going to do it anymore? They didn't like it. That's it. They like all the musical accompaniment. Okay. So, but one of the things about what we're talking about, when we're talking about the worship of the church and music, is we're communicating. And so, if something gets in the way of that, Russell, is that your hand or your arm or something?
One of the words, submission.
Mm.
We want to be obedient.
Mm-hmm. He's not unable to communicate, which is a point I want. We're going to look at when he did communicate about musical instruments and see what he said. Because if he wanted them, he would have talked about them. And he did. But does anybody here just really naturally like to be told what to do? I don't. Is that like your favorite thing? No. Okay. But what does Jesus ask us to buy into? He wants to be the Lord. Why do you call me Lord, Lord, and do not do what I say? Luke 6:46. And so part of being a Christian is self-denial. What do you want? Not what do I want. There's 1,001 things we want.
It goes right back to obedience. I like, that's not what God wants.
Yeah. Happiness is a byproduct of obedience. It's not the main thing. In fact, sometimes you just got to grit your teeth and do what you know you need to do, whether you want to or not. You ever been in those moments where you're tempted to do something and you want to do something and you know you're not supposed to do something and you just, I'm not going to do it? You happy? No, you might be happy later. Well, that's just part of the deal. Okay, another thing about this is teaching and singing, as we just mentioned, is non-negotiable. We got to do that, which means also that what we teach, what we say, has got to be something that's biblical, because we can't just teach anything. We got to teach something that's biblical. So it's not just, are we going to have mechanical instruments or not? Are we going to sing something that's biblical or not? Is another aspect of it. Solidarity. We all sing together. in our songs. Now, some we've got parts because that's, but we're all singing it together. We're all part of that. We don't have any people that are just sitting there listening to somebody else. And there's another thing about what commonly happens. You've got the special people who can sing well. God is not interested in how well you can sing. I mean, he doesn't want you to be awful if you can do something about it. But there are people who can't carry a tune in a bucket. And I've heard some of you, and you are the same. Others of you do better. You know who you are. But yeah, they in fact, we had a lady close to where I sat at Carnes, and she was great, and she helped me stay where I needed to be. And the person up there, they need to know what they're doing because they're the song leader, and so they're trying to get us to not go crazy and try to stay somewhat where we need to be with the song, or it becomes disorderly and defeats the purpose of the whole thing. Now, I'm going to... one of the things here, look at Hebrews 13:15, please. Hebrews 13:15. Somebody read that, please. The fruit of our lips, our words, our songs, our hearts, our talking to God. Just to be perfectly frank about it, with the purpose of New Testament worship and what we've seen about communicating truth to one another is one of the major things in our solidarity and all of that. In that respect, God could care less about an instrument. He wants to know what's going on with me. Okay? Just as far as that goes, I know we can talk more about aspects of that, but that's the heart of the matter, if you will. In fact, Ephesians 5:19 talks about making melody with what? Your heart. So what's the instrument that God, and it makes perfect sense, doesn't it? I mean, really? What's the instrument that God really wants to hear in a song making melody? Heart. Okay, now, let's say that. Just because you're sitting in the auditorium in a building that says Church of Christ on the outside and you don't have an instrument doesn't mean you're making melody in your heart. Does it? So, it's time to sing. No. It doesn't mean you sing pretty if you can't sing pretty. But you're speaking from the heart. That's what God wants. Yeah. As a parent, you want your children to talk to you from the heart, or you want to make a bunch of stuff up to make you happy? Well, I know the answer to that. Sometimes when they do something just from their heart, it might not be a big thing at all, but you know it's coming from their heart and you appreciate it. They might do some orchestrated thing and spend a lot of time on it, but it's not really from their heart. It's just one of those things they got to do and doesn't mean nearly as much to you. It's something that comes from the heart. When I was in Knoxville, the main TV station in Knoxville, their little thing was straight from the heart. That's what God wants. Why wouldn't he? Of course he does. Fruit of the lips. Okay. Tabernacle, temple. Right at the end of the page here. Tabernacle. What's the tabernacle? It's a tent, host of ark. It's what they carried around in the wilderness because they're moving here, there, and yonder. So they don't have a permanent structure. And they had worship associated with that tent, that tabernacle. And God gave them some rules about how to worship with that tent and tabernacle. Later, when they build the temple in Jerusalem and it's fixed and it stays there, God gives them some more stuff to do because they're not wandering all around. So what does God ask them to do with the tabernacle worship? The only instrument used in the public worship of the tabernacle was the trumpet. Why'd they use a trumpet? They just like trumpets. Secondarily, why'd they use a trumpet? Because God told them to. The Lord spoke to Moses, make 2 silver trumpets. Did he say make 5 silver trumpets? Did he say make 1 silver trumpet? Did he say make gold trumpets? Did he say make brass trumpets? No. So if you're a tabernacle worshiping person and you come out with 3 brass trumpets, how's the Lord going to feel about that? It's, oh, it doesn't matter. No, because he told them what to do. Okay. Now the trumpet was regulated in three ways. It was the only musical instrument God told them to use. And so guess what they used? Trumpet. The priests were the only people authorized to blow the trumpets. So guess who blew the trumpets? Right. The priest. And the occasions for blowing the trumpet, the times when the trumpets were to be blown, were spelled out. So when did they blow the trumpets? When the Lord told them to blow the trumpets. This is so easy, isn't it? Because it is. Okay? Okay, tabernacle gives way to temple. And some other things happen. David didn't get to build the temple, right? He wanted to. Nathan told him, great idea. God says, Nathan, no, it's not a great idea. Nathan got to tell him he can't do it. He's a man of blood. Who's going to build the temple? But who gets to give the rules for temple worship for the Levites? David. Okay? Let's look at 2 Chronicles 29, 25. 2 Chronicles 29, 25. If someone would share that, please. Who did what? 2 Chronicles 29, 25. God stations who? The Levites. Where? Was the temple? What else? Hearts and lyres, cymbals. Okay, what else? According to the command of David, what else? Gad the seer, Nathan the prophet, what else? The command was from the Lord. Where'd this come from? The Lord. How many instruments does he name? Three, right? Did I miscount? Okay. Who's playing the instruments? Levites. Where are they playing the instruments? Temple? Okay. So. If you were to restore Old Testament worship, if you were to try to do that to the church, and you would say, well, here's the way Old Testament worship went, we're going to do it. First of all, you don't know what the ark looks like, and it's gone. It's in Oak Ridge, by the way, but they won't let us have it. And the Jews don't know who Levites are today. So you couldn't do Jewish worship today because you can't prove you're a Levite. Okay? But in the Christian dispensation, in a sense, that doesn't matter. But in the Old Testament, if you're going to have instrumental music and you're going to have it associated with temple worship, which is where this is going, you're going to have, and the Psalms that deal with music are music, is music associated with temple worship. Okay? So that's, and who's it from again? Who gave this ultimately? Okay. Gad and Nathan didn't make it up, did they? David didn't make it up, did he? Why are they doing it? Because the Lord said, here's the way I want music to be at the temple. Here are the people I want to play the instruments. Here are the instruments I want to play. And he will tell when he wants those instruments played. And guess what? That's what they did. Why did they do that? That's just what they're told to do. Okay. Now, down here, I've got instituting or reforming the temple worship order. In fact, I've got one of them twice, but we'll work that out. One of the things about this is I always find things every time I teach it that I didn't see before. Okay. This is 2 Chronicles 29. In 1 and 2 Chronicles, 2 Chronicles 29 is toward the end, right? Right? But temple stuff's toward the beginning. 1 Kings, 2 Kings, 2 Kings actually is when we have it coming on. So why am I giving you a passage from 2 Chronicles 29, 25 when that's not when it happened? Okay, I'll tell you because it's plainly worded. But when Solomon is building the temple, when he gives the instructions about what to do, guess what instructions he gave? days. You know, temple worship's constantly falling apart. You know how the Jews were. They get little revivals and this and that. Remember that? All the time. So Jehoiada the priest, 170 years after David in 2 Chronicles 23:18, what does he look to restore the music of temple worship? What David was told. When Hezekiah, 300 years after David, wanted to get the temple worship back where it needed to be, what rules did they look to? Ones given by David. Josiah, 380 years after David, when he's having a revival, a restoration, if you will. Hezekiah's the one we read a minute ago, but it's all going back to the same thing. King Josiah's, what's he doing? Exactly what David told him to do. Zerubbabel, when they go back to rebuild the temple, and Jeshua the priest, 550 years after David, what's the standard for temple worship music? Again, David. Nehemiah, who's the last of the bringing people back. 600 years after David. What does Nehemiah do when he's wanting to make sure the temple worship is what it needs to be? What does he do? He does what David was told to do by Gad and Nathan, who were told to tell him that by God. So you got 600 years of, we've messed up, let's do it right. We 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 messed up, let's do it right. And when they get to doing it right, what do they always do? They always do what God told David to do when they started it, because it didn't change. He didn't come and say, well, I got another idea for this. So people knew what to do if they wanted to get back to what it was. They did what God told David to do. At the bottom of this page here, in both tabernacle and temple worship, God was not indifferent about the use of musical instruments. In other words, he didn't say, in effect, when it comes to instruments in worship, it doesn't matter to me. I let you do what, decide whether or not you want to use them. I'll let you decide, to use them. I'll let you decide which to use. I'll let you decide who uses them. I'll let you decide when to use them. I don't care. Did he do that? No. He said, here's what I want you to do. This is the easy part, by the way, because we're not Jews and don't have to worry about it. Okay. Let's look at some folks over on the next page. Now, first of all, we can't go back to Moses and David because we're not in the Old Testament, but I wanted us to see. A guy up in New England wrote a book called New Light on Old Worship or something like that. The fellow that wrote it is a Baptist. And he wrote it and put these points in here that I've just shared with you to suggest to his fellow Baptists, we need something like that if we're going to do it in the New Covenant. Okay, back to our story. With regard to the New Testament, let's find out what it says about church worship and instruments. Let's find out. We want to look at everything it says about church music in worship. Everything it says. Just like we did the Old Testament, we saw what it said. We want to find out what it says here. So what instruments of music has God commanded in the public worship of the New Testament? Which ones? I got the answer here for you. None. Not a word is mentioned in the New Testament with regard to musical instruments in the worship of the church. Not a word. The New Testament gives no command for the use of mechanical instruments in the worship of the church. Neither do we find even a single example of musical instruments ever being used in any of the churches. God has not commanded the use of any musical instruments in the church. This is a fact that stands in sharp contrast to what he did in the days of Moses, where he did command it and told us what to do. Now, whatever else we may think about what we're talking about, that is true. Whatever else we might want to say, well, yeah, but, well, that is true, what we've just read. Nobody can refute that. You can get your concordance out and look all you want to. It's not there. Only singing has been commanded in the worship of his church. Now, let's look at 1 Corinthians 14:15, please. Somebody read that, please. Okay. What's he saying? He's going to sing with the spirit and with the understanding? Okay. What about Ephesians 5:19? Somebody read Ephesians 5:19. Psalms, hymns, spiritual songs, singing, making melody in your heart to the Lord. Colossians 3:16. Parallel. Colossians 3:16. Okay. Singing, communicating, words, heart. That's what we got. Okay. John Price, who wrote that book I'm telling you about, here's what he said. In contrast to the many Old Testament passages referring to musical instruments in temple worship, in the New Testament text, no one sound of a musical instrument is heard, not a trumpet, not a harp, not the quietest jingle from the tambourine. Singing, yes. Musical instruments, no. Relative to musical instruments, there is an ominous, haunting silence. And that's just the truth. This guy, he's not one of us. He's from a fellowship that uses them. And he says, we can't find it. It's not there. Okay, church, well, let's look and see. I'll try to do this very quickly. What have people said about it? This doesn't make it so, but, you know, we're using instruments in the last 150, 200 years is a rarity. Let's look at what some people had to say about it. John Wycliffe, who started the Methodist Church. John Wycliffe, who was an early translator of the Bible, got into a lot of trouble about it. He protested that churches were filled with nominal believers. They feed their senses to excess in religion. Their eyes with sumptuous spectacle of the church's ornaments. Their ears with bells and organs and all of that kind of stuff. And he says, apart altogether from religious feeling. So he doesn't like what's going on back there. John Huss, who was 100 years before Luther and was the basis for Luther getting started. He complained that when people came to church, they gape at the pictures, the vestments, the chalices, and other marvelous furnishings of the church. Their ears are filled with the sound of bells, organs, and small bells by frivolous singing, which incites to dance rather than to piety. So he didn't like it either. Turn the page. Bottom of this page. Modern church music is so constructed that the congregation cannot hear one distinct word. That's mostly the case. More stuff. Erasmus, who was the best New Testament scholar of his day, he put together a New Testament from the manuscripts he had that became the basis for the King James, because another person got credit for it because he was on odds with the Catholic Church. But we have introduced to churches a type of laborious and theatrical music, a confused chattering of diverse voices, such as I do not think was ever heard in the theaters of the Greeks or the Romans. They perform everything with slide trumpets, trombones, cornets, little flutes, and with these voices of men contend. Men run to church as to a theater to have their ears tickled. So he didn't like it either. Herbert Zwingli, who's one of the three great reformers in the Protestant Reformation, long story short, he says, musical, choral, or instrumental, no matter how religiously inspired, artistically beautiful, or superlatively performed, must be prohibited from worship because Scripture has made its existence impossible. Hubert Bullinger, who followed Zwingli with the Protestant Reformation, since they also are not in accord with the Apostles' teaching in 1 Corinthians 14, the organs in the Great Cathedral of Zurich were demolished in the 9th of December in the year 1527. He said, we can't find them in the New Testament. We're not going to have it. John Calvin, Biggie, in speaking of employing the psaltery, the harp, in this exercise, he alludes to the generally prevailing custom of that time to sing the praises of God upon the harp. The psaltery unquestionably formed part of the training of the law and of the service of God under the dispensation of shadow and figures, the Old Testament. But they are now not to be used in public thanksgiving. We are not, indeed, we are forbidden to use private musical instruments, but they are banished out of the churches by the plain command of the Holy Spirit when Paul, in 1 Corinthians 14:13, lays down the inviolable rule. We sing. Robert Holgate, who was an early English guy when the Church of England came into being, said, in effect, we will and command that there be no playing of the organs either of the morning prayer, the communion, or the evening prayer within the Church of York, but that they be said playing the utterly, that said be utterly ceased, for as much as playing of the organs ought and must not be For as much as playing of the organs ought and must be ceased and no more used within the churches of York. He didn't like it. And we got a whole bunch of things going down here. And I will get down here. Anybody ever got Matthew Henry's commentary? Heard of that? Old commentary. Matthew Henry said it's Jewish stuff, not to be used. Several I went over because of time. Isaac Watts writes a lot of hymns. Don't use instruments. There's no authority for it. How many of you have heard of Charles Spurgeon? He was considered the greatest preacher of his day. He preached at a church in England. He was considered to be the primary preacher of his day. He was a Baptist. And he would not allow an instrument in the building. Why? Because he said you can't find one in the New Testament. There are other things, but you've got the handout. I'm simply saying this. We have an uncommon practice in churches of Christ today. It didn't used to be uncommon. The first absolute established, they accepted it, they used it, was about 1,000 years after the formation of the church. There were some scattered things here and there, but as far as, in this case, the Roman Catholic Church, they put one in at Rome. Later on, they took it out. The lesson is yours.